Recording. Cambria Community Healthcare District. So I call the meeting to order and ask you to join me in the pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May I have a motion to allow the board to conduct this meeting within the AB 2449 guidelines?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And I can establish that there is a quorum and that we have all members of the board present, with Don Colessa joining us via Zoom. Are there any members of the comment? Okay, we're going to try this again. Are there any members of the public wishing to make a comment today? Is there anybody online, Linda?
No, other than Don, double check. No, everyone's just on and on today.
Terrific. Okay, so hearing no public comment, we'll move on to the consent agenda. You included in your packet was the minutes of the October 24th meeting, and hopefully you had a chance to review them. Does anybody have any comments or corrections to the minutes?
I just have a question, and my 77-year-old brain can't remember when Bruce Mumper was appointed ombudsperson.
It was at this board meeting, the October 24th. It's not noted in the minutes?
No, I don't believe so.
And I think that's an important item, and so I think that this occurred during the discussion of the interim supervisor.
Yes.
So could I ask that we, somewhere in B2, that we add a sentence noting that the board appointed Director Mumper as an ombudsman for the operations group?
Well, it's not just the operations group, it's just for the district. I mean, for the employees of the district.
Yeah. Is it,
I mean, if, for example, there was a complaint by Simone, it could be referred to Bruce. Don't you suppose? I thought it was for all the employees, not just operations, but
I don't think, in my recollection, I don't think we had clarity. Is there any?
My understanding was for operations, but if you can discuss expanding it if you want.
What did you understand, Bruce?
Yeah. You're the ombudsperson.
Well, my understanding was primarily operations. I went and met with at least two of the three already and told them, reminded them my role, that apparently, in particular, with the fact that many of them are represented by the union, that there could be a conflict, and so bring me in if there's a problem and we'll talk about it.
Okay. So it's operations.
Okay, with that addition, does anybody have any other comments on the minutes? Okay, can I hear a motion to approve with that addition?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, 5-0. All right. So we're going to begin with the operations report, and we have you have a report from all three supervisors in the packet, but you have Michael Bryant here in person. And I would like to note that with our new structure, attending a board meeting like this, if Michael is not on duty, which he is not today, means driving all the way up here from his residence.
Oh, wow.
To be at the board meeting. I really appreciate Michael's doing that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Does it help her hear better if I'm up here?
Possibly. Oh. Don might hear you better.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
This is Mike. Can you hear me okay?
No, I can.
Okay,
you.
Excellent.
That probably did help a lot.
All right. Well, thank you for having me today. I think I've met most of the board members and had a good conversation with them. For anybody who doesn't know, my name's Michael Bryant, named one of the three interim supervisors to fill the departure of our previous operations director and help fill his big shoes. I've been working for the Kansas Community Healthcare District for the since 2017. Prior to that, I was an EMT for the Sierra Vista Emergency Department. I served there for 9 years. And prior to that, I was a PCF firefighter for the Guadalupe Fire Department. Happy to be here today. I love this community, and thank you for having me. So for the report, I wrote one third of this, so bear with me as I summarize this. So for our transport activity report, there has been a pretty significant decrease in number of incidents. We had 44 less compared to last year, but only one less transport. And I think the reason for that is the addition of Medic 9-4 into the Area 3. They are primarily to cover Los Osos and assist in the code 8s when Morro Bay is out on a call. It has cut down on our code 8s pretty significantly since they went into operation. So that, I believe that's the main reason for us having so few incidents compared to last year. Response times and delays. We had 91.5% of our calls responded to within 10 minutes or less. We have a requirement within the county to meet at least 90%. The majority of those calls, there were five in which response time was longer than required 10 minutes. The majority of those were at night, and it was in the Lodge Hill West area. From where our station is, it's notoriously difficult to get there within the 10 minutes or less, depending on where the location is in Lodge Hill West, and that's just due to the number of intersections, having to clear those, some really tight roadways, and a lot of times there's a lot of side navigating to be able to get to those residents, which can delay us. There's also an added delay at night where staff have to wake up, put on uniforms, use the restroom, and they take about 2 or 3 minutes to get into the rig at that point. Equipment and medications.
Before you go beyond that,
of course.
You talked about Lodge Hill, but then you said there was one delay due to required staging for crew safety by dispatch.
Correct.
Can you elaborate on that?
So sometimes when we get a call for service, if it's a psychiatric issue or possibly an assault, things of that nature, where there could be a question of safety for our crews, the dispatch will ask that we respond to stage. So it means that they just want us to be a safe distance away from where the call actually is, until law enforcement can get there, secure the scene, and ensure our safety prior to arriving on scene. Depending on where those deputies are, it can take a significant amount of time. So we may be there in less than 10 minutes staging, but we still have to wait until they're able to clear the scene and allow us to.
And that's what happened in this
case.
That's
correct. Yes. For equipment medications, we're currently reorganizing our supply room, just making sure that we have a good idea of what we have in back stock. We've been clearing out some expired medications, and we're ordering any necessary supplies, obviously, to ensure that we continue to be ready for service in both our primary and backup units. We did receive a new radio that was previously ordered for Unit 22. Staff was able to successfully install that into Unit 22, and it's in service and working well. Unit 22 now possesses all the radios necessary for the anticipated countywide encryption transition, which I've been told it will occur probably in about a year, but I haven't seen any paperwork confirming a firm timeline on that at this time. Any questions on equipment or medications?
Let's see, where was it that you talked about the ambulances, and you only covered 3 out of 4 ambulances?
Oh, did we?
Maybe that's, that's in Hoover's.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'll get to that. Okay.
Michael, do you recall, I do remember buying a bunch of new radios.
Yes.
I think it was last year. How many did we buy in that first order?
For the handhelds, I'm not sure about that specific order, but we have 9 currently radios. There are 4 that are primarily in service, but we have several backup that are...
So with this new one, we have 9.
This is one of the radios for the ambulance, so okay. It's a little different. We have 9 handhelds, and then we typically have 3 radios in each of our units. So it would be, 12 between our 4 units. And I'm still going through creating an inventory for our radios currently to ensure that we're ready for that encryption transition. I've been told that Unit 21, our 4x4, still needs encryption radios, but I have yet to go through and confirm that. I'm going through the actual serial numbers and confirming whether or not they're encryption-based.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's for San Luis Ambulance covering for the Cambria Community Healthcare District. In October, they had no calls for service in our response area, meaning for transports. They had no Code 3 and no Code 2 calls in our area. They were asked to move up and cover 14 times, and they covered a response area for a total of 20 hours in the month of October. for the healthcare district covering for San Luis Ambulance's response area. We had 10 code 3 calls and one code 2 call. And we were asked to move up and cover 34 times for a total coverage of 16 hours and 13 minutes. And, I mean, that's pretty typical for what we see. A lot of times we have a much higher number of move up and cover, but for much shorter durations. And typically San Luis Ambulance will have less of those. We'll have more time on service or on coverage. Then that's just due to the fact that our transports are so much further than theirs are, and it takes us longer to get back into our service area to release them from coverage. For Monterey County calls, there was a typo in my report. I had indicated there were 2 Monterey County calls. I was corrected by Linda, and she stated that there were a total of 4 Monterey County calls during the month of October, not November. So again, yeah,
so this should say October.
Correct. My apologies.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So this would be an increase, not a decrease, of 1 call compared to October of last year. Currently, we are the only ALS agency to cover the southern region in Monterey County, and we are still trying to monitor updates from Caltrans regarding the highway closure. We do not have an anticipated opening date at this time. For Supervisor Nerge's report, some of his notes were in November rather than October, and just, you know, but we can cover those real quick. So we did have one of our paramedics turn in his resignation from full-time status. He's still going to remain with us as reserve. He accepted a position with Paso Robles Fire Department. He's a great employee. We're glad we can keep him on as a reserve. But obviously that left extra vacancies, which made staffing in November difficult. We did have to brown out your downstaff Unit 12 due to his unanticipated departure. We simply couldn't fill the shift. So on Thanksgiving,
it was just one day.
It was just the one day. We didn't have any issues that were reported. There were 2 calls that happened during the night that Medic 11 had to cover. There was 1 to into Medic 12 service area. And San Luis Ambulance did have to come and sit code 8 for what I was told was about 5 hours in total. But they didn't have to come and respond in for any calls during that time. Nurse just reported to me that we anticipate being fully staffed in January. We were able to hire an external candidate. They're currently in training, and they have worked in San Luis County in the past as a paramedic for San Luis Ambulance. So he's just arriving back in the county. We're redoing his accreditation, and he's anticipated to be full-time on the rig as of December 5th. And we have a reserve paramedic who is going to be accepting with an anticipated start date of January 1st, moving to full-time. So we anticipate that as of January, we'll be fully staffed for paramedics, which is really exciting. We currently have no employees out for COVID-19. And are there any questions on Mr. Nerge's report?
No, I think it's amazing. I mean, really happy that he was able to find candidates to fill those jobs.
We've been very lucky, and you know, Nerge is great. You know at what he does, and he's good at networking. And we were just, I think,
sounds like he was the guy.
It was the timing as well. We were in full time employment at that point.
Yeah.
For Supervisor Hoover, for ambulance unit maintenance. So we say it's units 18, 20, and 22 are all in service. Unit 21 is not in there, but I know unit 21 is in service and working as well.
It should say 20, 21, and 22.
Correct. For equipment medications, so we did receive our 2 milligram doses of Versed, which were on back order, and those have been placed into service by Mr. Cooper.
What is Versed used for?
So Versed, also known as midazolam, we typically will use that as a medication for seizures. So any seizure disorder people we have, that's our first line medication we'll use, is midazolam. Will typically help stop those seizures. We can also use them for behavioral disturbances, so people who we just can't get to calm down, or an issue for safety for themselves and for the staff. In that situation, we follow our behavioral protocol and actually give an IM injection to help calm that patient down. Okay. And then for facility repairs, it sounds like Jeff Thorma, owner of Thorma Electric, met on site with board members to replace the electrical panel for the district. There will be a follow-up to the facility committee. 2 new outdoor signs were ordered for station crew quarters with arrows pointing to the administration office door. I believe this will help with our walk-ups to be able to ensure that they know what direction they need to go to. The second was to put 911 signage at the front of the building. The additional signage will instruct the reader to call 911 after hours. We have had an increase in walk-ups recently in the middle of the night. We just had one actually on our last shift where, you know, we'll have somebody coming and just knocking on every door just prior to midnight. And it can be difficult to get clothed, to help them out. And so we're trying to put up extra signage to remind them to just call 911. And for community outreach, we had crews participate in handing out candy at the Cambria Elementary School as well as the trunk or treat.
Sugar free, I hope.
Are you going to participate in Locals Night on the 4th?
I'm sorry, what?
On the Locals Night, December 4th?
You know, I'm not sure. I'll have to ask Tim Nurgen, Paul Hooper. I'm not sure if we're going to be participating in that next time.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Good job.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Linda, with the administrative and finance report.
Okay. All the stands, I have my computer right there. Okay, good morning. I am reporting on your October financials, both and also year to date. So in October, net ambulance billing of $90,000, $419,000 was favorable to budget. Even though we had only 59 transport activities versus our 65 budgeted, we still have a net increase of $4,515, which is good. So just an increase in billing, it looks like. The district did receive general taxes in the amount of $21,000, bringing our year-to-date total favorable in the amount of $2,965. So we're doing well on our tax budgeting. Other income, we did have the 4 transports noted. Again, that's $8,000, so $4,000 over budget, our budgeted amount, which is good for the month of October. In February, the notable expenses that I noted on your financials, payroll expenses, unfavorable to budget in the amount of $24,475. That was for accrued time, hours paid out for a final check, increasing the administrative payroll expense. October expenses for operating were favorable to budget. In the amount of $36,000. We did budget $35,000 for in our fiscal year budget for the ductless heating, cooling, and the new shower. So that budget item fell in October. However, we have not completed those repairs. So you'll see the year-to-date catching up to that, possibly to that
$35,000. Sure. Didn't we transfer money from the trust to cover it? So is that noted in the report somewhere? It said that would be...
It is not noted. You know, I don't think I'd put that in there. That comes off the cash balance, but I can note that in the report here. We can add that.
Mm-hmm. And how much was that again, that it's transferred?
And that will be identified... I think that hit in November, so I don't think...
Oh, okay.
Your main financial... I can double check that. Your fleet expense, favorable to budget, the amount of very small amount. Supplies were purchased the prior month, which were reflected in your year to date. Other income, the district received funds from the trust account for the facility repairs related to the fire inspection. That was the $20,000 noted in your bank financial. As far your net income for October is favorable to your budget in the amount of $12,725. And year-to-date net income versus budget in the amount of $71,000.
Okay. First you said it was in November, but it wasn't.
Let's look at your, let's pull that up, whether it's not loaded in our...
Well, it's not in other income.
So it's November.
Yeah.
Okay, but you were just saying that money was transferred.
No, she asked if money was transferred in October, and I said I would note that, but pulling up your bank financial, you'll see that it was not in October. We did that in November. So that will be reflected in your next month's report. Okay?
Okay, but yet the beginning balance of the trust account, as shown on page 14, is only $14,000.
Okay, so we're talking two different things. I think she was talking about the $45,000 transferred from Lake.
No, I am not talking about the $45,000. I was talking about the amount transferred from the trust to cover capital items.
You were talking about the trust account. The $20,000 is noted.
Right. I'm just looking for the, because it's not noted. If you look at the income statement for October, I don't see it anywhere. I would have. Wouldn't that be a donation?
It'd be on your balance sheet. It's not. It's not income.
Let's check that, Linda. I'm not sure I'm understanding. I need to get back.
That would have been under grant underneath. Double check that for you. I'll bring that to you at your next meeting. Mm-hmm. Human resource, we did our open enrollment for your health for our dental and vision. We were able to update our plan for the vision to the VSP plan, which is a good thing for the employees. That's a small expense increase to the district of $151.92. And is the Medicare grant ambulance, I think I mentioned that at the prior meeting. That was a pretty comprehensive report that was due.
Yeah.
It only happens, I believe, one time. It's the one and only time, and Simone worked really hard and to get that complete. There's a lot of data, a lot about transports, your vehicles, depreciation. There's a lot that goes into that report. It's a one-time, they're capturing data from all the ambulance services to do a report for that Medicare to identify if they're reimbursing enough to them.
And we know the answer to that.
I think it was a good data collection. We're hoping it's a good, because our expenses, of course, are much greater than what we receive in reimbursement. So other than it was a lot of work.
Thank you, Simone, for all of that effort.
It was a good thing that we had. Committee participation, we just worked on flyers for the October-November classes for that they will talk about in their committee reports for Donna. And then one thing that to note, that we did have a meeting with LAFCO. LAFCO visited the district. They gave us about a week notice for this, and Rick Miller participated in this meeting with me for this. And what they are asking, LAFCO is requiring what they call an MSR report. It's a municipal service review of the district. And this we haven't reported, been in this review since 2014. So it's been quite a while. And what they do is they review all the cities, they review all the special districts, and then they compile one report for the county of San Luis Obispo. And you can see our past report on the LAFCO website. So we will be updating that. We were a little nervous about, oh my gosh, what does this report entail? But after the meeting with them, they actually go off of a lot of our audits. So we have all of our audits complete with them, except for the newest one, which most are still working on, the 2023 June. But they'll go back over our audit reports, and what we'll do is just update, not the purpose of, but the current working of what the district does. I'm just going to update so they look at boundaries, see what our coverage is, things like that. So it's kind of just a review of the district for the county to have their own community knowledge. Is anything you'd like to add for that, Lori?
No, they do the majority of the work. We're just going to provide them some updated numbers on the fleet and the number of transports and such. Mm-hmm. So it was a very friendly meeting.
Yeah.
Very good.
And that concludes my report.
Any questions for Linda? Okay.
So we have sufficient funds to meet payroll and all the other expenses without having to use our vendors as creditors?
Yeah, let's hope
yes.
So.
Yes. Good.
All right. Moving on to me. Thanks, Linda. For the President's Report, two main items that I want to talk about. And the first may to some of us seem like old news, but since the board last met, we did receive Tim Benz's resignation. And I think we all feel that that was a great loss to the organization. One thing I did note is that I do think a sign of a very healthy organization is if it can lose a key employee like that and yet stand itself on its feet. And I think we did a good job, and I know I've said it a thousand times, but I really thank Tim and Paul and Michael for all of their work in stepping up, and Linda. And we certainly wish Tim well.
Thanks, Simone.
And Simone, I'm sorry, this was just a great amount of work for this was a very busy month. I know how hard everybody was working this month, and that is absolutely including Simone. The other item I wanted to report on, which isn't related to the district itself, but it is peripherally, is that the trust is this week mailing a solicitation letter to households, reflecting on the year behind us, but also in accordance with the suggestion that was made by this board, asking for support in our next ambulance procurement, which is really funny because, you know, I feel like we just got one. But that's part of educating the community, is no sooner do you get one, you really need to be thinking about the next one. And so that fortunately is going out in the mail, and we hope to get the community's support. I believe that is my report. And turning to Lori, property and facilities.
So we did meet in October, and we have Rob Nash here with us today, so he's going to present an updated proposal for potential ways to move forward on new facility with different options and updated cost estimates for that. So I'll wait on that. Bruce met with the electrical engineer, correct?
Yes.
Yes, and so he has since contacted PG&E, and they are working together for a solution on the electrical panel. And we're still waiting to hear back from him on that, but it's all moving forward and looking very positive that we'll have the solutions relatively soon. And other than that, that's all Property and Facilities has been working on. I would say, Michael, if we have a unit that needs to have upgraded radios purchased, let us know, because maybe that we can apply for that through the FEMA grant program that we'll be doing in January.
Absolutely. I will get right on that.
Okay, thank you. And other than that, we'll just wait for Rob's excellent presentation.
Looking forward to it.
Yes.
Any other questions for Lori? Okay, Don. Healthcare advocacy. And one more time, congratulations on that mailing to households. I can't tell you how many people. Look at that. There it is, right there. If you can see it, but she's holding up.
Yeah, I've got nothing but positive feedback.
Yeah, really, real appreciation from the community.
I'm telling you, I couldn't be prouder. This was a huge team effort, and I am hearing really positive things as well. I'm thrilled. The community has this resource at their fingertips that what we envisioned is available. And everybody, I think, has been getting a lot of anecdotal commentary and stress about more times. This was team effort. I mean, Lori, Iggy, Bruce, everyone, Cecilia, reviewing and commenting. Linda, Simone, and community members, and also Lawrence Nylon was very involved in our Spanish translation, and Elizabeth Gallup did that translation. And the good news, part two of the guide there, said Spanish is completed and waiting to be distributed. So on that piece of the guide, I'm going to actually ask the
Hang on. Iggy's asking a question.
So, Calla Romero runs Head Start. Mm-hmm. We probably ought to get some to her so she can hand them out to students who can then take them to their families. And then we have Danilda Reyes, who operates out of the middle school, or junior high, whatever we're calling
I get
State
that.
We should probably get her a stat to hand out to parents. Well, I think the district can easily send someone over with a stack of them to Santa Lucia Middle School, and then also just right around the corner here to where Tom Romero operates.
Give you a call. I can probably help, John.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. So that's on the guide, but I'm just so happy it made it for the holidays, and if people have that school, everyone is saying just how comprehensive it is. Now they don't have 18 pieces of paper. It's all in one.
Sorry to interrupt again, but I was talking to Julie Amaday on another subject this morning, and she said, and I forget how she came to know this, but apparently the coalition of hotel operators, like along Moonstone Beach Drive, would really like to have some copies.
Would that said coalition make a donation to our 501c3 appreciation?
So this is this coalition of hotel operators, and who leads that? You know how we would? I don't know them.
Can we contact Julie?
Yeah, contact Julie.
Okay.
No, that's a great comment, Lori, in terms of, you know, we have an X that we made, it will cost to produce more, and if the hotel industry wants that, I'm sure there's some kind of...
I like both suggestions, yeah.
Okay, we'll do that.
So thank you. Excellent. I don't think Linda has mentioned this, but the 3K grant did come in.
Oh, it did. That was actually my question for you. Well, wonderful. I'm glad that came in. We'll give our thanks to Supervisor Gibson, I assume.
Yes. Oh, that's the $3,000
that we asked to cover the Spanish.
Yes. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. And then now moving on to healthcare articles. Just caught up the press. Iggy and Lori have been working pretty intensely on turning one of our goals is to take some of the tip sheets from our classes and have those turned into articles about that content. So we have a long turnout in class. People are still going to get that content through Camry MBA. And Amy has worked on cooking tips part 1 and 2. Thank you, Amy. Beautiful. I sent you some edits. And I think that's going to be really a rich way to get information, health information to people where they're not getting it in workshops. They're going to get it through Camry SCA. So... kudos to Iggy and Lori for taking the lead on that. I'm really appreciative.
It's only because I'm still operating on Eastern Standard Time.
Oh, come on, Iggy. You're up in the middle of the night even when you aren't.
Really happy. That's wonderful. Quick update on our classes. We had... I gave a report already on progress with the fall prevention class that we just recently had. We had good participation for the morning class. The afternoon class, it was one person, and they didn't really seem like they wanted to know about fall prevention tips. So here we have a lot of rich handouts that my hope is, again, we can pull the information together and create a health article out of that. It's really important just to find rich information that Michelle provided from Area of Aging Coastal County. So that's where we're at with that, trying to convert that information from fall prevention into a, that also into an article. And then no further classes through the end of the year because of holidays, but we'll be getting back into it. We'll meet in the interim to review, you know, the next top priority topics and possible speakers. But I've been getting a lot of feedback about don't hold a class in the rain, nobody will come, and we're really looking at the strategy of how to increase attendance where really need to be focused. So that's kind of the status of where classes are. Any questions?
Really, really thank you for all your work done.
It's everybody.
Just incredible.
Job well done. I want you to be proud of that.
Well,
what if we say CCHD and not a map? Someone said that.
No, I think many of us on this board have served in the Health Advocacy Committee, but I do feel like it got lit on fire when you took over.
Like I said, it's a team.
Alrighty, oh, somebody, can we, I think our speaker is locked out. Hang on just a second. We're going to need him. Oh, good.
You only thought you could escape.
Alright. Bruce, do you have any additional reports under finance?
Nothing additional.
This is a recurring theme.
Yes, we met and covered stuff on November 8th, but nothing in addition to what was just covered.
Great. Development, Lori.
We have not met, but pending the outcome of every pending the outcome after Rob's presentation, Linda and I'll move forward on contacting Senator Laird and Assembly Person Addis, as well as updating I think Panetta's office on where we stand with the project.
Yeah. His, my recollection is that January is, you know, they hit the ground running on the fiscal year budget, and so
we will be
having CCHD be top of mind by January 1 would be
yes.
nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I think that concludes all of our reports. We'll move on to regular business. The first item on the regular business agenda is the ambulance station update to the conceptual design. Are there any members of the public wishing to make a comment on this topic? There are no members of the public, so I'm doubting it. So, with that, I will turn it to Lori and Rob and Don and
so,
all of it. No.
So, Rob Nash from Banner Construction Management is here today. He has been our consultant on updating cost estimates for the proposed new facility. We did, as a committee, take into consideration everything we heard or the feedback we got both from the community and our staff as far as seeing what we could do to make this a more feasible project, and we're going to be, Rob will be providing a cost comparison that truly provides a comparison of apples to apples, so that every model that he presents is equal in size and function. It just is how you get, you know, with three different ways to get there. But we're pretty proud of where we are now. I think his report is very thorough and nicely produced and easily understood. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rob so he can expand upon it.
All right. Yeah. Where would you prefer? I said, probably about 7 years.
Yeah, closest to Don.
Great.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
So, as Lori mentioned, Banner was a consultant the first time around that we went out to the public and came up a little bit short. So, the district was kind enough to ask us to come back and look at some refined options, taking into consideration, I think, some input from the community. So, we looked at three options this time around, and as Lori mentioned, we've tried to get them as equal as possible in terms of an apples-to-apples comparison. We have them identified as models A, B, and C. Model A is a standard construction model, the typical construction you would see at most projects, stick-built from the ground up.
And for our costing, we've compared today's prices for that construction versus where we were a couple of years ago when we did this initially. And just for reference, California Department of General Services tracks construction costs throughout the state on a monthly basis. So since we did the cost estimates the last time to when we were producing them this time, costs have gone up 18% in about 2 years. It's unprecedented, but after so many years, you can't keep saying unprecedented anymore, right? We've had several years of double-digit inflation in the construction industry, and that's not normal. It's always been under 5% at a maximum, and sometimes as low as 1 or 2%. So it's a challenging time, and unfortunately, even though we've made the project smaller, I've really cut back to the bone in terms of space. The project is not, we've lost 18% of that difference to just inflation. So it's kind of doubly painful. We're getting a little bit smaller, but the costs don't come down nearly as much as the square footage does.
Well, just to help me think about this, my recollection was that we had construction escalation in our number. So is it it's the delay of the start? I mean, it's always going to have construction escalation.
Yes.
So it's just now our starting point.
Our starting point is a couple of years later.
Yeah.
We have to factor that into current prices, and then we're still projecting out escalation to when construction would reach its midpoint. So
sooner is better.
Sooner is better. In this market, sooner is better. So Model A, as I mentioned, was the standard construction model. That would be a multi-phase project where we would make ready some area within the existing building, within the existing original building, for the administrative functions as well as operations. Demolish the 1967 addition, and then
to be specific, that's where the admin office.
Admin is currently. That's correct. Thank you. And then once the district is moved out of the 67 addition, that's demolished, then work could begin on the new building on that larger part of the site that would be available. Then at the end of the construction of that new building, the district would move in, and then sort of the third phase would be demolition of the existing building and the completion of site work. So that's sort of a general flow of construction. Our estimates are based on using a design build methodology for procurement. So the district would work directly with a builder and an architect to develop the plans at the same time as developing costs to make sure that you're staying within budget.
Where in that process does 25, 35 get torn down?
Phase one. Yeah, that would really be
a long way from 67.
Yes,
it gets
yes.
torn down too.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And that frees up that part of the site potentially for parking or lay down area for the contractor, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yes. So Model B is very similar to Model A, except it's modular construction. So the building would actually be built in a factory, would get shipped out in pieces, put together, but it's very similar in terms of what has to happen ahead of time. You still need to move the admin offices into the original building, demolish the existing bays and the 67 addition. Then you have a clear sight to drop this building on when it comes, and then completion of demolition, completion of site work. These are about as close as we can get apples to apples of comparing essentially standard construction to modular construction. And I think you'll find the costs between the two methodologies are very similar. There are some savings in one method that are offset by savings in the other method. So,
but in terms of how long the standard construction will last versus modular construction.
I was surprised that they came out to all still end at the same time. I thought that would
be fast. They're within a few months.
Yeah.
Model A, I believe, would finish at the very end of 2027. Model B, I think, is 3 months sooner than that. And Model C, which is a renovation model, is verify on that, is around the same time as the Model A. And, you know, again, we have, this is conceptual. Mm-hmm. All these things can be refined if this turns into a project and durations can get further refined. But at this conceptual level, they all are ultimately similar in cost and similar in ultimate time frame.
Okay, but how about answering my question, which is how long will the facilities last?
I would say for each of those, you should expect a 30 to 50 year life.
So
no difference.
I remember when I participated in the committee before, and correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but the stick built, as you're referring to it, was set to last substantially longer than a modular. Is that no longer the case?
So the modular that was identified by the district, the modular company, which is Extreme Modular, and there are a few others out there, they are essentially building a stick-built building on a steel frame that they're delivering to the site. So it's not...
I see.
Originally, we were looking at modulars more of what, you know, the standard stuff you might see at a school or, you know, that kind of thing, which is...
lower grade.
A 20-year building, maybe, okay. You know. But this is a quite substantial... There are no corners cut. It's just built off-site and delivered. It's not... In fact... The building itself per square foot for the modular, I was surprised, is actually a little bit more per square foot than the standard
construction. The other thing was just so odd to me.
But again, this is where it gets a little bit odd, because a lot of the design costs with the modular are in the building.
Okay, and then in terms of tearing down and site preparation, with the modular being built off-site, we could delay that.
That's correct. That's really the big difference between the Model A and Model B. Is essentially, in Model A, the district has to get out of the 1967 addition before construction can start. With Model B, with modular, the district doesn't need to move out until the building is ready to be set, which is potentially a year later or so.
That's great.
So yes, there is that
very large advantage.
Yeah, I mean, it in the end, you still have to do all the same steps,
sure.
But they happen sort of one at the beginning of construction versus one at the end of construction. So, yeah. And then finally, the third option, Model C, is based on a complete gut renovation of the existing building. So in that case, the district would have to procure, either lease or buy, some modular facilities as temporary offices and housing, and then our estimate is based on basically tearing down to structure, essentially. All the building systems within an existing building, as you know, need to be replaced. So that's why I say I think that building, when you're all done, is going to be a 50-year building as well, because you're going to bring it up to current day code, you're going to have all new finishes and things like that, so it should be just as functional as either of the other buildings. Square footage-wise, it's very similar, within a couple of hundred square feet of the size building that we're estimating for Model A and B. So, I think, you know, there's a lot of detail if you want to drill down into all this stuff, but at the end of the packet, I've included a couple of summaries that I think pull together the three different models and allow us to really compare them side by side. But
is that page 35?
It looks like this, Iggy.
Yes.
So when you get down to the bottom line, and the way we, if we can just walk through this. So item number one, we estimate the building itself independent of the site. Line item number two is the site cost. We add those together, and then we escalate that out to the midpoint of construction. And so that introduces some variations in terms of the amount of escalation. There's a $400,000 or so difference between the three, depending on where that midpoint of construction is. Then we add all that together, and you get sort of a what would be your bid day cost, the day that you receive bids or proposals. We're estimating that in that case, Model B, your sort of bid day cost, would be your highest, and Model C would be your lowest cost. But
that doesn't include rental of offsite lots.
That's correct.
And all that.
And that's captured in the soft cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not
so
something
in the total,
you're going to bid
it
out.
In there.
So
it is in the total then?
It's in the total at the bottom.
Okay.
It's captured.
Somewhere I thought I had read when I was reading through this that it didn't include.
No, we incorporated that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's why when we look at building and site soft costs, here's where you see some real differences in the different models. Model A and Model C are very similar. They have about $1.5 million in soft costs. But Model B has very low soft costs because they're absorbed into the cost of the building. So it's the same money. It's just getting put in different buckets. But at the end of the day, it comes out to be very similar costs. And then I've got the soft cost line items broken down so you can see how they might compare from model to model. The big differences are design costs for Model A. That's you're going to bear those costs directly, but as a soft cost, versus Model B, where those costs, when you buy the building, their design costs are factored into that. We see that Model B inspections will be significantly less than either of the other models because it is a pre-manufactured building. It actually is inspected by the state versus local, and that's something that will be on the building manufacturer itself. And those inspections typically happen at their factory, not at your site. Other significant differences are project or construction management. Model A and Model C are based on some sort of a halftime representation, whether that's someone you hire, somebody you bring on as a consultant. That's sort of a placeholder at this point, but it's a reasonable number. We really think you can get by with less representation during construction with the modular because obviously most of it's being done off-site. Other big differences?
Anson, can I just clarify?
Sure.
The project management is for one halftime person?
Yes, over the course of 2 years or so.
Oh, thank you.
Right.
Thanks.
Yes. No,
you needed
we'll,
that help.
We'll all sign up for that one. Yeah.
You're going to have her check.
And that's sort of a fully loaded rate, you know, where you get benefits and all that.
The other question I have, change order contingency between Model B and C seems inverted. Model B is a modular.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to construct it off-site. I don't see any change orders. You're going to install it on-site. There might be some change orders because you run into
unforeseen conditions.
Unforeseen conditions,
mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Talk about unforeseen conditions. When you tear down that building,
mm-hmm.
I would think, in other words, you've got the change order contingency much lower on Model C than you do on Model B, and I would think it would be the reverse.
So this is where you get into a little bit of the limitations of cost estimating. At this level, it's done based on percentages. So we're estimating 5% based on the building and site construction cost. So because
because Model C's building only construction cost is lower.
Right, and you end up with a low. But I will say that we've been conservative in the numbers we've used for the renovations, anticipating that it's not going to be a clean, easy job to renovate that building. So the numbers include some room to absorb some existing conditions that may not be anticipated.
I mean, if somebody looks at this, they would say, oh, gee, why don't they just renovate? And, I mean, just from a conceptual view, I would think C is the messiest of the three options, and B is the cleanest.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Model C probably carries the most risk because you have the most opportunity for unforeseen.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the change order contingency is far, is.
Yeah,
Don, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, well, change order on C, if you take that. Totally tear out everything on the inside, which is basically what's going to happen. For new plumbing, new electrical, new interior, take all out of the asbestos. You don't have kind of the change order frequency that you might have on A or B. And I would think that B would be slightly less. But it shows a little more also, maybe because of the interior stuff on the factory build. You know, there just generally there is the less expensive way to go. There is the right way to go. There is the best way to go for the district and the crews, and all of that, you know, is really not reflected here. But I agree that with what Rob says about the level of detail on these, there are so many variables left that we need to make decisions on, and I'm assuming, and I'm quite sure, that the renovation model will, as we look at it, probably increase in cost. And I don't know what Rob thinks about that one, but it's just real messy to try to do that renovation.
Yep.
And it does not give the district, I think, really what it should have going forward. You've still got real old stuff you're trying to patch up and fix. And that's gonna create some problems. So,
and while we've got this group here, just for myself, we're talking about C right now. Messy, I've heard. I'm trying to envision so that I can maybe share with other people later what it would look like. Because I see a cinder block building for the most part. You know, it's got a flat roof that's been fairly recently redone. I mean, what gets preserved? You take everything out, is what I'm hearing. Cinder block stays in place.
I would say some may and some will probably go. And a lot of that is going to be a structural consideration.
Yeah. Take a look at to the left of the front door, to the administrative side entrance.
Yeah, that's
it's crap.
Yeah, stuff like that is where I'm trying to envision what's left, you know, what stays up. And because, you know, my inclination, you know, hearing you, Don, it's my inclination all along, just by my observing it, is, oh boy, the C doesn't look like a good way to go, but I want to be able to envision it well enough to be able to tell other people in the community. It's not a simple thing. It's not. Some people will say to me in the community, we can put Band-Aids on it. We can keep And obviously this is far from a Band-Aid, but it's going to be very expensive because it involves a great amount of work.
It does. There are also some limitations. With Model A and B, you are designing the facilities that work best for you in the footprint, in the shape, in the adjacencies. With the existing building, you've got to work within sort of that configuration. It's not to say you can't come up with a great design, but you have more constraints and you've got, you know, structural columns and things to deal with. It's not quite as purpose-built as you might want when you're spending a similar amount of money to a new option. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd say is, in my mind, it's down to the structure, the slab. Maybe some of the exterior walls remain, but all the windows are bad. You know, the doors are bad. So
no, we have good windows and good doors.
Okay, well, I'm going off our last report. Not the work you've done since then. Well, good. Well, now we have to keep it. No. We're going to be cutting up that slab, I'm sure, to put in new plumbing and things. So
yeah, that's one of the things that really worries me, is what's under that slab.
Yeah,
and that's something that we don't have to deal with
the other option,
especially not with Model B. Even though Model B appears to be the most expensive, oh my gosh.
Anyway. Yeah,
but it seems the most straightforward and best for the crews. I mean, and for the administrative people, they don't have to move until we got a new building set in place, and
right,
they can just move into it.
Right. So you're not inconvenienced by construction for a year or 16 months.
Right.
Yeah.
And inconvenience translates into lower levels of service to the community, frankly.
Right.
So
yeah, there is some cost to it. That's correct. The caveat I'd say about Model B is, I don't know, and we're really basing it right now off of one manufacturer.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are a couple of others out there, but I don't know how much experience they have in California. I don't know. I'm not very familiar with their process and how closely they stick to the proposal that they've given you up front, and how difficult it might be to make any changes. You know, if you decide we really want this room to be 2 feet wider, let's take it out of here. You know, on site, that's not a big deal. It's a few bucks. But in the factory, I don't know whether that, you know, requires a bigger effort or more cost than.
Well,
so are there other companies that you're more familiar with?
The companies that we're more familiar with are more of the modular, a lower level of modular.
So I had a brief conversation in Europe with this company, and I know that they have done some structures in Northern California.
Okay.
For police department. Fire, I think. Mm-hmm. So, and they are willing to work with the state of California and their regulations.
Right.
Correct. That's
well,
a big starting point.
I talked to the company. They,
yeah,
you know, they know, they were familiar with where we are and know it's in California, and we're mm-hmm. prepared to run the traps for that.
Well, since we're using design build, that should help.
Mm-hmm.
Because once we agree on the design,
right,
then it's up to the contractor to do what's necessary to achieve that design.
For the agreed upon price.
For the agreed upon price.
Yep. Yep.
So we're motivated not to make change orders.
We are motivated. We need to get the floor plan right.
Yeah.
Well, to that end, the difference between Model A as it now stands and our proposal, you say we took it down to the bare bones. What does that mean?
We've taken out about 2,000 square feet, about a third of the area.
And what was in the program for that 2,000 square foot?
Like in many cases, the spaces are smaller, mm-hmm. or there are fewer of them. So like the meeting room, we had originally intended that to function potentially as a open to the community for community meetings. It's now a fairly small room that really just operates or just fulfills the operations of the ambulance crews. Everything is just smaller, more
ambulance space. It's definitely smaller.
Yes.
Before, there were going to be four ambulances side by side. Now they're in tandem.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're still
which isn't ideal, but it's that function. Compromise to try and get.
It still meets function. But the thought was, before, the problem was we had, 6,600 square feet?
Yeah.
And we couldn't do an apples-to-apples comparison. The modular is limited by what the shell they use, correct?
Yeah, and what can be shipped.
And what can be shipped. And so the question was, well, if that was going to be adequate for us, why would we not?
Why would you construct more than that?
Right.
We wouldn't have an apples-to-apples.
Right, and so this allows the community to see a better comparison. And we're still meeting function. And it's not the Taj Mahal anymore.
Well, I think that's important. I think
it is.
I'm not sure it was ever the Taj Mahal.
No.
It is cut down to, I think, pretty close to the bone.
Yeah.
You know, we were looking, I think, originally at a 30, 50-year building and trying to anticipate, what may happen down the road. I think the building you get now is adequate for your current operations. If it were to grow significantly, it won't support that. But I don't know that big growth is a driver.
Does this design include the fueling station?
No.
So it doesn't see there's things missing.
Right.
A number of things, yeah.
Well, but those are things that possibly we could go after grants to.
Isn't it code required?
No.
You want a fueling station?
No.
But solar panels may be, correct?
They are required and they are included.
Yeah.
Well, I don't get the redundancy between the design in the soft glass comparison between the architect design bridging document and then the design build entity design. I mean, that's a lot of money.
So
$385,000 for design services on top of your design services?
So the original, the A&E design and bridging documents are to develop the criteria that you want your proposers to meet. So we need X number of these kinds of rooms. You're going to define the finishes. You're going to define sound transmission coefficients, lighting levels. You're going to define this criteria as much as possible. It may be with drawings. It may be only a written document with bubble diagrams, for instance, or that kind of thing. But you need to establish that criteria so that all the proposals you receive are going to be apples to apples. Everybody's going to meet that criteria. But that just gets you to a conceptual design that they're then going to say, and I can do this for $5 million. Great. But once you award the contract to that design-build entity, which is a combination of a contractor and a designer or an architect, then that architect needs to now finish the design, do construction documents, go get permits. So it's not necessarily cheaper than if you were to go do a whole set of construction documents and go out to bid, but it pushes that cost onto the design build entity as opposed to the district. And the real advantage to that is any errors or omissions in that architect's work is the contractor's problem, not the district's problem. So that helps lower your risk, lower change order.
So with that, that's very helpful, by the way. So with that in mind, why is there... Now I'm not understanding why it would be so much cheaper in the scenario of a remodel, or even the modular. none of that exists in the modular because the manufacturer is determining all those things for you?
The manufacturer has included the cost of that design in the quote that they gave you for the building. So that's why the building looks so much more expensive, because it's absorbing $500,000 or so of design costs that aren't broken out into a line item.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the design costs for the renovation, because you have constraints, there's less criteria that really needs to develop. Because you're in a given size, you're really at that point almost just a space program and some finishes and lighting levels, things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the cover memo provided with agenda item, the concluding said, with the board approval, the Properties and Facilities Committee would like to continue to move forward with project research and funding. Which project?
Well, the way...
I think that's the question.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I need to praise Rob for his temperament and calmness in working with one member of our committee who was really just drilling down on everything for quite a while.
That's good.
And it'll go unnamed. But it's my way of thinking, and my understanding is that I'm thinking we need a $6 million bond, and when I'm looking at this, and whether we go with Model A or B,
it's immaterial,
that the cost difference is.
Yeah, you can't make the decision based on cost.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
essentially the same. And Model C continues, as I think we're all expressing, makes me extremely nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as I have a brother who's a contractor and a brother who's an architect, and both of them said every time they've done a renovation, they've said, gee, it would have been easier to build it from the ground, rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get it done, but it's all the unknowns.
Yep.
And,
I look at it from the standpoint of the crews and the administrative people that currently live there, and if you ask me my opinion, which should be obvious by now, is go after the modular, because it gets built off-site and it gets delivered.
Mm-hmm.
You can move into it, and then you can get rid of everything else. I think that you ought to just pursue that. Plus, you don't have as was just pointed out, you don't have this design build, and we don't have any civil engineers on our staff, or engineers, period. And I think that we would be ill-equipped as a district, as long as the building lasts as long,
mm-hmm.
we're ill-equipped to do other than a modular, simply, easily, and confidently.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then it decreases our reliance on trades to get to the site in a timely manner. And,
right, and weather and material issues and all that kinds of stuff. Yeah.
So I, from my opinion, I would recommend that we pursue Model B with vigor and try to find competition.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Model B probably needs a little bit more research to identify more viable companies so you get competition.
Right.
And just, I think, dig in a little bit further with these companies just to make sure we fully understand what you would be getting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Model B is an exciting opportunity.
Because then you can make a value-based award.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because each company will provide a list of what will be offered and then the committee can make a value based award.
Right, and you can even in your criteria say, if you're able to include anything above and beyond this minimum criteria, the district will be most interested in something like this or one of those, extended warranties, whatever. And then you'll start to see that companies that want to win will try to sweeten the pot for you. And that's really one of the nice things about design build is that you do, you have the opportunity to get more than you thought you might get. So
when I think modular, I think somebody's bringing me a trailer.
No.
I know, said that. I mean, but you do, don't you? You're modular.
Absolutely.
So what is it? Does it really look like original construction when it arrives? I mean, couldn't you tell that it was constructed off-site, or is it really that?
For me, the only way I think you might be able to tell is because the modules are what can be shipped. So the building will probably have some breaks at those lines, mm-hmm. at what could be shipped.
Was it more square? I mean, like, you're not going to get weird articulations.
Well, you can, because you've got a series of rectangles that you can then push and pull to create articulation and not having necessarily a flat facade. So there are opportunities. There are plenty of design opportunities.
Including the exterior. I assume that it can look mm-hmm. like anything.
Yeah, at that point it's just cladding. So, I'm very impressed with the stoutness of what I've seen from Extreme Modular. I mean, it's a building on a steel skid that they then put in place, and you bring your construction up to it. It looks very interesting and exciting.
You know, I'm interested, being that the costs are kind of the same, and if it was just us deciding, you know, modular sounds good, but since we're going to need to convince the public in terms of a bond, perceptions like you just mentioned, Cecilia, about, oh, it's one of those.
We're getting a trailer for $6 million.
So we have, you know, last time it was the Taj Mahal that we had to try to...
Now we're overpaying for a trailer.
That terminology, because it wasn't.
Of course not, but I'm saying...
This is a perception. I agree with Bruce that that was a perception.
So the previous perception was one problem. I just, considering the next perception that we'll have to deal with if we go modular is the stoutness of it. And then there's also the consideration for some people. I mean, we lost by a very few number. There are some people who will say, I like to see local contractors and local trades involved in work, and I don't like the idea of something coming in from somewhere else. And, you know, it's not my opinion one way or the other. It's just in consideration, because so many there are other things.
In summary, you just can't win.
How to lose less badly.
And Don and Rob can correct me, but I think using modular for this is incorrect. It's factory built.
Factory built.
Yeah. Okay.
It does change the... And I don't know if we could go to Extreme Modular and say, can you give us a rendering that would represent what we're talking about, which would be very helpful, I think.
But one question I've got for the district is, since Model A and Model B are, from a cost perspective, essentially the same, nominally $6 million, if you went to the public and said, you know, we have scaled down, cut to the bone, here's where we are at $6 million, do you have to make the decision of whether to go modular or stick built now? The ask is the same in terms of the dollars. It'd be the same building, essentially. What you're talking about is just how you deliver it.
Well, so when would you... So taking the bond aside, I agree with you vis-a-vis the bond. I mean, it seems to me that the number's the number... Well, at some point, you do have to decide, when is that point? When are you delaying the project by not knowing?
I think you make that decision sometime between now and the bond election. if, obviously, if you want to tell people ahead of the bond election, yeah, we're planning to pursue this factory-built solution, then you'll have to know well ahead. But I'm just wondering, is...
Well, you don't need to decide today.
Right.
You definitely don't need to decide today.
Part of the problem that I've perceived during the last resistance that the public had was, why can't you have gotten to the point where you know how much it's going to cost because you've gotten the bids? Are we allowed to get bids on an unfunded project?
Well, don't you need to do a bunch of this work to get bids? I mean, that's a cart and a horse, because you'd have to have done a lot of detailed planning to get a firm bid.
To get bids. I'm not sure.
See, I know in the federal government we're not allowed
the time.
In the federal government we weren't allowed to do anything but a draft. We could do a draft RFP,
right,
and get draft proposal
responses. Yeah, yeah.
So that's how we got around that.
Right.
If we can do that in the state of California, and if we then present it to the voters that we have draft proposals that say we need this much money.
Is it material to the voter? I mean, how you got to your number?
It seemed to be, you know, because some commentary was, hey, you know, you're asking for $8.5 million, but you don't know exactly what it's going to be, because you haven't.
Oh, I actually didn't hear that one.
I did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, quite honestly, I think we've answered a lot of the questions. We've done a head-to-head comparison of the total renovation versus the, you know, just replacing systems, which was the problem before. I would hate for us to get bogged down in trying to get pre-bids when we know, when we've paid Vanner to give us a cost estimate that should get us where we need to be.
I'm just providing feedback, as I recall.
Yeah, well, one other thing about design build is you can have what's called a stipulated sum. We have $6 million. Mm-hmm. This is what we need. What can you give us for that? Not, this is what we need. How much does it cost?
Mm-hmm.
You know your cost going in. You know your scope. Mm-hmm. Then it's just a question of what does the design look like?
But I don't know if I would want to do that in a modular, because I'm not convinced that this is the most efficient builder, right? I mean, I might be more inclined to do that if we really hadn't talked to a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go out and say we're going to spend $6 million.
That's why I would want to do some more research on modular first, and just make sure we could get real competition in California, because I've had issues with other pre-manufactured structures getting approvals in California. It can be a lengthy process. But if there are three or four companies that have done it, have gone through that, know what it entails, and they're willing to do it again, then I think, you know, you'll be in a good position to be able to get competitive proposals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We can do that. But it's also, is it possible to, we have X amount of dollars and then we put it out for bid and we get both traditional construction and modular bids?
You could, yeah.
Is that possible?
I mean, there's no reason why you can't accept proposals for a traditionally built structure and a modular structure.
So with what you're saying, Laurie, does that mean that we pursue a $6 million bond and present that to the public without a commitment on which way we're going with it?
I mean, you're still, you're a year out, right?
No.
Well, maybe not a whole year out.
No, we're not.
No, I mean, we've got other issues too, because recall that if we're looking for state money, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. in January, Senator Laird says, okay, I'm going to ask for X.
Mm-hmm.
At least my limited experience with the state government awarding things in their budget, you won't know that in time to have the measure written for the bond. You won't know how much federal, how much state money you could get. And that, to me, is a much bigger trick. Because what if you get $2 million from the state and then our number becomes 4 instead of 6 and you've written the ballot measure at 6? I mean, that might be a John Eisen question, but I still think there's an issue.
So the ballot measure isn't due till August.
August,
yeah.
Right.
But the state wouldn't...
You probably would have a really good idea by August.
Okay.
I mean, but they go right up July 31st. You will, because July 31st is a constitutional deadline for our budget, so you would know July 31st. You wouldn't have received it, but you would know.
So we'd have a few days.
You literally have a few days, yeah.
But that's
because it's what? It's 120 days, and it's not, or whatever. It's 120 or 90? But apparently you back up, there's about 2 other weeks of administrative processing in the county. So it's tight. Anyway, it's tight. So there's like all these moving points, parts in those numbers.
And would it affect any possible state funding if it were known that we were going with a modular that was being built out of state? Would state be a little bit less likely?
That was going to be my one question that I don't know right now, is if there were state or federal monies, would they have a, you know, a manufacturing in the United States or manufacturing in California requirement? Obviously, if we could demonstrate there were no comparable manufacturers within California or within the United States, but there's 3 in Canada, you know, you might get some relief from that. But I don't know what strings those
folks. Well, that might be a good conversation with Senator Laird.
Okay.
About whether or not he thinks that's an issue or not. But.
Okay.
So it sounds like we're looking for direction to proceed. It feels to me like the board is ready to rule out a renovation.
At that price, yeah. I mean, I can't see why we would spend almost the same amount of money to just renovate.
So, and that the action, if you will, it says none at this time, but it's just sort of the concurrence that we would continue to move this project forward.
Yes.
Yep. I definitely think there's agreement with that.
Mm-hmm.
The one other thing, and I know that this has always been, I have to mention this because I talked to Daryl about it at length, is that the district overall, with the conversation we had earlier about how Medicare reimbursements, et cetera, don't go up as fast as your costs do. So, and we are already making up a great deal of that difference with supplemental property tax income. But, if we had a huge staff of analysts and we were doing projections for 10 years into the future, it really wouldn't be very hard for me to construct a scenario where we're not viable.
Mm-hmm.
And that if that's sitting next to this and you say, okay, you're going to have to go back to the community for supplemental support of your operations in addition to a bond.
Mm-hmm.
Are those in either or? Is the community prepared to do both? And if you say, no, our viability is most important, and you do that, and you have no facility, then what do you have? These are some very, very difficult questions, but I think they're very real.
Well, they're both true.
And they're both true.
Yeah.
But we have a facility.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think
except for the electrical.
We got an occupancy permit.
Except for the electrical right now, the electrical panel, it meets code. So we don't have a gun to our heads anymore.
Well, and I mean, it is funny, since I've moved to Cambria and I've kind of coming from the Bay Area where there's new construction everywhere, you come to Cambria, everybody's kind of living in their old house. You know, businesses are living in really old buildings, and I think that becomes cultural here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that actually, if you had a brand spanking, well, we have a new library, so we have a few newer, and we have new schools.
And the fire station is relatively.
And the fire station, yeah. But you know my point. It's sort of an unusual thing to say, oh, we need something brand new. So, no decision on any of this. I just think that these are part of what we, as a board, need to address in time to come.
Mm-hmm.
I really thank you for all the work. It's
thank
been
you.
Really,
thank
really
you.
Interesting, as always. Yeah. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Appreciate all your work on this.
Mm-hmm.
Our favorite volunteer. Yeah. Okay. I lost my agenda. I'm going to say interim supervisor's duties. Is that right? Not being able to find that, pardon?
Yeah.
Okay, that I got right. Okay, then, here it is. Who's presenting? You will?
I believe
you. Oh, I am? Sure, I will. No. I got this. All I have to do is find it.
Page 36.
Yeah, I tore apart my... Thank you. There we go. Thank you. So, at our last board meeting, I think it was... we were planning for Tim's leave of absence, and I think we had a very early view on how three of our paramedics, and at the time it's really more like two and a half, might meet the coverage needs for Tim's absence. I think it was having more time and really getting the, you know, having more detailed conversations between those three paramedics. We have a much, much more robust, I think, job description, which was attached as attachment one. And I think what was found, I know what was found, is that when you really accounted for all of the things that really needed to be covered with, I think, full understanding, I don't think there's any surprise anymore about what needs to be done, that third job, which was Paul Hoover's job, because you had to throw things in there like station maintenance and vehicle maintenance and also covering what they call the Adam 2, which, you know, we use that language like everyone in the world knows what that is. But my understanding is that that's your on-call to EMS, correct?
Correct, yeah. So the EMSA requires that they have a central contact person to respond to any, you know, countywide issues or agency issues. It also enables us that in the event that, let's say, an ambulance was involved in a collision or an employee is injured, we have a supervisor who's on call that's able to respond in and assist in either, you know, acquiring a backup ambulance to bring to them, potentially helping fill out any incident report forms, taking photographs, things of that nature that would be required in that type of situation.
So what we realized with that is that, you know, that you're on call, and so that was something that we would schedule on a rotating basis that was more shared as well. So what you end up with, I think, here, I'm oversimplifying, but that Michael being a primary liaison to this board and at a policy level, that Tim really being both training, recruitment, really a lot of the staff level responsibilities, that's what I see as uniquely his. And then again, with Paul Hoover having, we always had him as controlled substances, but some of these maintenance issues. So we really feel like it's an even level of responsibility between the three, which means the pay feels more correct at $1,000 per person. We had approved this at $2,500, thinking that Paul was $500 instead of $1,000. As far as the overall impact of this in terms of where we are financially, you know, I think that where we are right now is that we're giving this a try. I think it would behoove us to learn a lot about how this model works and what is the increment, you know, if we are going to go out and recruit, and that's an if, by the way, what is the need that's not covered by this or you know, does this model work? So we want to give this some time. So it's assumed that, yes, while there's $3,000 a month incremental cost here, we do not expect to replace the director over the next 6 months. And so depending on which salary figure with pension you were looking at, whether it was the 96 we had planned or the 120 that it used to be before, it's like a lot of moving numbers. But just assume even it's the 96, that mm-hmm. savings well more than offsets the cost. So, and that's part of one of the interesting things is that this model, number one, I think creates a lot more redundancy and shared understanding amongst the senior paramedics so that if one is gone, there's not just one person who understands everything, but at least in the short term also is more efficient. So the request today was to, I mean, it seems small, but because this is a big deal, it's $500 more per month, and wanted to get board approval for both the job descriptions and that level of compensation.
So I had asked Linda to come up with whether it was going to cost the district more money or whether we'd save money, and to what level we'd save or cost more over the six-month period. And I believe she came up with something.
Yeah, Linda and I shared, and actually I'm looking for it right now. We went back and forth a little bit on that analysis because I may have a narrower view. She did do the fiscal impact, but she had included costs that I don't believe are a part of the fiscal. We made a separate decision to appoint Linda as administrator, for example, and she had included her incremental salary costs in there. I don't think that that's a part of this. She had also included as an expense item in our run rate, well, at least as a one-time expense item, the actual cash outlay of accrued PTO as being a class that somehow was in this. I mean, the accrued PTO is just that. It's accrued on our books, and when you pay it out, yes, it has a cash impact, but it relieves liability on your balance sheet. And so I got tripped up. I think it's a very pure analysis. I think you are saving the director's salary and pension and offsetting that with a cost of $3,000 a month plus incremental pension. And that number is, it's got to be in the $20,000. You've got, what, 45, 50? Yeah, it's somewhere, it's probably $25,000. We didn't run it because this was all playing out this morning. But it's a savings somewhere in the range of between $20,000 and $30,000.
Okay, and that's, mm-hmm. that's all I wanted.
I understand. It is a savings, and it's roughly in that order of magnitude for, your burn rate. I don't know if it is for a whole year or not. Any other questions? No? Do I have a motion?
Well, I don't... We haven't heard from Michael.
Does Michael have anything to say on this matter? How's it going?
It's going. Yeah. It's,
oh, good.
it's mostly smooth. You know, I mean, there's, Tim's departure, of course, in and of itself is difficult. He was the only one that knew had his position and been working in this position the last several years. So there is a large knowledge gap that we're having to figure out as we go. Tim in Venice has been great. I've been able to contact him on a couple of occasions, and we just simply could not figure it out. And he's been friendly in giving us that information that we need over the phone, to try to assist. And it's a learning curve. Overall, I'd say things are running smoothly, but there's still a lot to be done. And I think we'll get there. We've got a good team of people, and the staff's very supportive and eager to help, and in filling those needs. So I would say overall it's smooth so far, but we're in the infancy, of this thing, and so we got to see kind of how it progresses as we go.
And I think this was since the last board meeting that we had those conversations with the director of EMSA for the county. Vince has been a part of this discussion, and I, was pleased that he had that level of flexibility to try this out. That our solution for them with having three different people, but we've not heard any, and it's three different people, not just for the on call, but also in the attendance of meetings, right? But any feedback from the county?
None so far, but the county hasn't held any meetings yet.
Oh.
that we've had to attend thus far. I know they're revamping a couple of their committees. Mm-hmm. So those are still pending because they're redoing them. As soon as they start announcing those meeting dates and we start attending, hopefully we'll get some more feedback. Vince is very helpful. I guess he was very open-minded, with this being a small organization. Mm-hmm. He did state that, obviously, it's more convenient if our supervisors are not actively working on the ambulance But being that we're such a small district and that our call volume really isn't that high in comparison to like St. Louis ambulance, he felt it was appropriate for our organization to have that person be working on the ambulance and on call. And he was just wonderful in offering that if we are in a large MCI incident, to just make sure we contact either him, when he stated he's open 24/7 for phone calls, or to contact the EMSA field supervisor, essentially that's on call for the EMSA, and that they could help in that management structure if needed. And that's if we're overcommitted, if we're an ambulance on a large MCI incident and we can't serve as that supervisory role, he had just instructed that we contact them and that they would send out their on-call person to help assist in that management.
Terrific.
You know, something along that line, it just kind of falls into this category, but I was talking with Paul Hoover, and, you know, he showed me the controlled substance sheets, and, so he said, here's my nightmare, and so we looked at it, and he reiterated that Tim Venice has been very helpful. We call him. Something that Iggy had mentioned in our last finance committee meeting is there a stopgap vehicle? Would it be appropriate in any way in not taking advantage of Tim Venice if these three needed in the short term some extra help that he could be compensated as a consultant, or so that we're not asking? I mean, Tim Venice is being generous. Are we taking advantage of his generosity or handicapping these three individuals when we say don't call him too much?
I know he came in and spent that time with Paul. I don't have a sense of the ongoing nature of this. It's probably pretty hard to have a sense of the ongoing nature. I mean, I don't want Tim to have to volunteer his time. You have to have a little mixed feelings about it, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't... my suggestion would be is that you let us know if, you know, there's a gap that you feel Tim needs to fill, and we address that on an ad. I don't want to say right now that every time we call Tim, we'll pay him X. But on the other hand, let's just deal with it in the moment. You know,
so as a possibility.
There is discretionary, Linda has discretionary authority.
Okay.
And it doesn't need to go to the board every time that we, spend X amount of money. So I personally am open if we're asking Tim to spend any substantive amount of time, and just see if that happens.
Okay. Hearing this right now, I told Paul that again Iggy had mentioned it, that I would mention it for the board, but so that the three current supervisors know that they do have that option in a discretionary sense. You know, if Linda has some discretionary funding or just something, so that I don't want to see them handicapped. Don't want to call Tim Venice. He's such a nice guy. We've taken too much advantage of him. I mean, if they really need help, I'd like them to know that we can.
Well, I mean, I think it would be helpful to have that knowledge. I personally have been trying very hard not to call him unless I absolutely need to. Mm-hmm. But there are situations that come up where, you know, we need them resolved in a relatively quick manner. And we just simply, you know, are having difficulty, whether it's, you know, finding certain usernames or passwords, or, you know, it's a program that's old, which we seem to have a lot of those, where that just don't seem to work on our operating system very well, and having to figure out those workarounds. I mean, there's, you know, that learning gap where we just weren't trained,
right.
And we do need to be able to, you know, capture some of that knowledge. It would be nice to know that if we're in a pickle, we can contact him to get it resolved more quickly than it would be to go through, you know, having to, you know, contact the, you know, service provider, get them to, you know, call us back and get them to assist us in educating. And a lot of times too, you know, just for example, our safes, not safes for narcotics, Pure Safes work on a really old program and are separate from our newer safe. And so it'd be nice to know, you know, that we can contact them and they can still help us with that little program. I've just been verbally told and begin with those conversations with Tim Venice that, you know, they're going to eventually stop supporting those older safes. And I mean, this is all, you know, again, word of mouth and things that we still need to talk to the company about. But it would just be nice to know that we can contact him, have him walk us through that process and resolve it quicker and learn how to use that system than it would be to have to contact the company. And I mean, it's a lot of hours of work and we're only there 2 days a week. So, you know, it does save us a lot of time, you know, especially on top of our normal paramedic fees.
Absolutely. Well, I think what you're hearing is that if something like that comes up, I think that, you know, it's one thing. If you're calling and asking for a username and password, that is, by the way, property of the district.
Absolutely.
And he's required to provide that. So I'm less inclined to sort of think that was extraordinary. But if you need him to sit down for a couple hours and walk you through a program,
yeah,
I think that we should determine what a reasonable compensation is for that. And I'm certainly open to that.
The other thing, you're mentioning old safes that maybe...
Sounds like we need a new safe. But
yeah.
that's
is that on our capital list?
More research on, and as soon as I have that information,
yeah,
I'd be happy to present it so we can plan on
yeah
that future acquisition.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I'm mentioning it is that it's been a while since the employees have approached Project Heartbeat.
Yes.
And I don't know if Bob Putney is reachable anymore. I know I talked to Tim a number of times before he left, and he had a lot of trouble getting through to Bob. And I don't know if there's another director at this point.
That's a whole lot of money that's available to...
The last I knew, there was over $150,000. And now they wouldn't touch what they call the corpus, but there's...
It's been
interest.
So long since they've paid off, there's got to be
right
a lot of accrued interest.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years. So I would think that there's, I don't know, $15,000, $20,000, maybe more.
Excellent.
And we...
So, how
do we get a hold of them?
Is he still active in Rotary?
Yeah, he's on Fire Safe Council.
Oh, well.
So I'm just, maybe there's a more formal way to go through the county, because the county manages this, to then ask them.
The county manages Project Heartbeat?
Well, because there's a series of charitable
yeah
organizations that are managed at the county.
Oh, is it the Community Foundation?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't think that's the county, but yeah. Huh. Okay. It sounds like something the president ought to do.
But anyway, so I just don't even know who's on the board anymore besides Bob. I mean, it was Christy Jenkins, but she moved.
Is Jerry? Is Jerry Wood a member?
No, I don't think so. I think it was Christy Jenkins, Bob Putney, Dr. Fratto was on there at one point, and then one of the Melendis. Not Jason, but
Don.
Was it Don Melendi? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I've taken note. I'll see what I can find out.
But that's something that the employees, you know, if the employees say, hey, we need, then you guys would go directly to Putney or whoever else and ask for certain equipment to be approved.
I'd be happy to, you know, try to contact Mr. Putney and see
you know
if
him?
We could get some information on that.
Do you know him?
I don't.
Okay, so let me try and find him for you.
Okay.
Don't spend your time on that. I'll do
okay
that. And then once I do, I'll connect you.
Excellent.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. I do need action on the original.
Yes.
Item.
I would move that we accept
approve
that
the new job descriptions
the
and compensation.
Description and the compensation, yes.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 5-0. Thank you. And thank you. Okay, Linda, local agency investment fund.
Yes. We have our LAIF account, the local agency investment fund account, and it has
this is what we know as our reserve account, correct?
Mm-hmm. And we currently have they have two representatives for this, and currently we have Mike, your former administrator, Mike McDowell, so we're just asking the board for permission to okay, that was my name on the account, and then we continue to have someone on the account as well. And we would need the resolution 43-20.
So Simone is already on there?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. And that is in your attachment, the authorization. Well, that's just a copy of the only name change would be removing Mike Riddell and adding myself.
And the way that that is set up, a withdrawal, or I guess it's a transfer to the operating account, what, from the bank's perspective, what's required in terms of signature?
It's actually a phone call for that, correct? It's actually a verbal from one of the representatives on the account.
Okay. Iggy just stepped away. I don't know if we should be taking action or not. I mean,
Well, I move that we do that. We should change the name.
Yeah, I think we should probably get Mike McDonough off that account. Yeah, that's my suggestion.
I'll second it.
Okay, and I know we probably, Don, speak for yourself, okay, probably have a 4 vote right now, and we'll get a 5th when he's available. Okay, wait, that was wrong. You made a motion. Somebody second?
I second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
I shouldn't have spoken for you, sorry. And so we'll circle back with Iggy on that. But finally, standard operating procedures, and this item, and I don't know, Michael, if you want to speak to it, I can speak to it briefly, which is that, you know, we do have a set of policy and procedures, and when Tim, who is principally responsible for hiring, you know, was looking at these in the context particularly of hiring reserve people that are currently reserved and moving them to full-time status, that we were requiring a bunch of process that really should have only related to a new employee, because it's just silly to have to go through those things again. And so now I have to find this agenda item. So that really is, if I'm not mistaken, the summary of this item is that it deletes a number of those requirements that, and the red line was provided, I believe. Yes, the red line was provided. Some other minor changes, but I think that really is the most significant one, is to make it easier for us to move people from reserve to permanent status. Did you add anything?
No, I would say that's an accurate summary. I mean, one of the headaches that Tim Nurch, as he was looking through the policy for hiring, and what we found is just there's a lot of requirements on there that makes it difficult for us to quickly fill a position. I mean, there's requirements on how long to post the position, providing an external recruitment, and we have to really put our reserves through a lot of hoops that they've already done to get a position in the district. For example, you know, we're to do drug and alcohol testing, and we're already required in order to have our driver operator endorsement for ambulances for the DMV, are required to have a DMV medical examiner's physical once every 2 years. And so it just felt redundant to require them to have a physical to be hired to as a reserve, and then also require them to go through that again to become full time when they're already actively working on the ambulance for us, as well as doing additional drug and alcohol testing, which, you know, has an incurred cost. So it just seems like we're making them go through a lot of the same things again that while they're already employed with us. So it was to streamline that. It was to streamline internal recruitment to make it easier for us to hire, you know, candidates that we've already really been able to test drive and make sure to be a good fit for the district. And those people that we feel would be excellent full-time providers that want to get that internal promotion, you know, we're trying to streamline that process. Additionally, there's times where, you know, we used to have a lot of applicants several years ago, and recently, you know, we're happy we get one or two applications of people that qualify for the position. And by streamlining this, one of the other adjustments that they were talking about is downsizing the number of people required for those
interview committee.
And so instead of making it required, making some of those optional, for example, like a board member or a person of the public, and making it so that way, if we're going to do an interview process, say Friday, because we want to get shift filled as quickly as possible, and we know that we've got some quality candidates applying, that instead of having to get 4 different people scheduled to work, you know, we could say, hey, there's an interview Friday, invite a board member, possibly invite a community member, or whoever the administrator would like to appoint, And if they're available, great, and we can have a full interview panel. If they're not, as long as we're meet that minimum of two people, then we can still go ahead with the interview and not delay the process.
Are there any questions regarding this item?
Mm-hmm.
I thought these were really good suggestions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, this is Tim's strong work. He apologizes for not being able to be here. He had a pre-existing scheduling conflict.
And he's also not working today, right?
Correct.
He's yeah, so I don't think we would expect more than one of you to be in attendance for these meetings unless it were a very special presentation that related only to that person. But I think this is straightforward. Do I have a motion to approve?
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 5-0. Thanks, Don. We heard you. Okay.
Did you want to circle back to Iggy?
Iggy, when we were just replacing Mike McDonough's name, we just wanted to include your vote in the
sure.
motion. Okay. So that is a 5-0 vote. I keep using the same piece of paper every time. It's that darn agenda, which I believe that this draws us to the conclusion of the meeting. Thank you. Are there items, future agenda items? And maybe I'll turn to Linda first. Let's see here. One thing I meant to address in my remarks, but is more appropriate at this time, is the December meeting itself. I think that if we go by what do we meet on the 3rd or the 4th?
Fourth
Tuesday. I think that puts us right into the holidays this mm-hmm. year. And so I wanted to get your input on what you'd like to do for the December meeting.
I'm available on the 19th.
I am available on the 19th.
Yeah, I could do the 19th also.
Iggy? Well, that was exceptionally easy.
Okay.
Let's see.
19.
Got it.
Is that okay with you, Don?
Yep.
19th will be our next meeting.
We can do this. You will confirm?
Yes.
Yeah. And if possible, did we own that screen that we would have right here? I mean, we remember in prior meetings we had the screen right here?
I believe, but I don't think we own the projector, so I'll look into both.
We thought we do own the projector.
Okay,
Tim told me that we own
it. Tim dragged one of them from home, but I'll follow through.
Okay, I don't know. It just seems, it feels more like, because it's not always just John, but not just John. I like being able to, I can see John, but I think the whole thing, if we do have a system for making it a little bit better, that would be great. So with that, are there items, Linda, that you anticipate for the December agenda?
I believe the LACO write-up for that, I'm not sure if that will be under committee or under an agenda item. I think we have a due date for that, but we will give you an update.
Do you expect a report by then, or do you think you'll just have an update?
I think they said February.
Yeah, I think it's January. I'll look into the date.
Okay.
That's a possible date for that LACO report. And I do not have any other items. We will bring
possibly
the electrical update.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I was going to ask, he came,
he saw, he hasn't
he left.
Conquered. But, you know, he's been in touch with Eli, with PG&E. The encouraging thing to me, because I would just look at worst case scenario
yeah.
when I talked to him, and to know that whatever happens, can be done from the outside.
Yeah.
This is not a rewiring of the internal.
This is not breaking that envelope of asbestos potentials.
It's the electrical panel itself right now, right?
Yeah, it's
correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it
outside.
You know, it won't be cheap, but it won't be horrendous, and it won't involve any mitigation with asbestos. That I was dreading.
Yay.
Yeah.
I think we'll survive this one.
Anyway, so that should be on the agenda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We hope that we have some information. Yeah.
Anything else?
So, since we have two things that are true
mm-hmm. yes.
regarding the facility and also our viability,
sustainability,
mm-hmm.
Should we not be undertaking some kind of solution for that, or seeing what it would take to assure our viability, and also possibly exploring whether or not we put two ballot initiatives on? because this community needs to understand, you know, I believe that we can convince them that we need a new facility. That's a buy-in that we want to keep our ambulance here locally.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need to realize that we have to be able to pay our staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I absolutely support that. I think I made a commitment that we would and should look at this. I'm going to put it on the agenda, and I will myself and maybe work with the finance committee. But I'm pretty good at doing projections.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to add anything to Linda. Yeah,
no,
this is like.
No. And, you know,
I'm not very good at accounting, but I'm very good at forecasting.
And you know, and speaking with John Isom as well, is, you know, what is our jeopardy in doing something like
right.
this?
Very good. Yeah. That'll be a very meaty item.
Because
sure.
it weighs heavily on me, you know.
Sure.
Like how do we solve both of these problems?
Sure.
Right.
Well, in some ways if that is an advisable thing from Isom's standpoint, it makes me feel better to put something before the voters, you know.
Well, and if we're going to go out campaigning, I mean, it does seem like you can have one conversation, but that's just me naively thinking that you don't go through the two big election processes.
If we have some projections, like you said, and some numbers to back up, to say we think we have a solution for mm-hmm. the future, but it involves both of these things.
It does. I think it does.
Love that.
Okay, so we're going to discuss that next month.
So I've got the three items, and anything else that comes up in between, just let me know, and we will include it. And with that, call the meeting to adjournment at 11:10.
And I have to go get grilled.
I'm so sorry.
Grilled. Oh, no. That sounds like a tooth, I hope.
No.
Not anything else. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Simone, you need me to sign
yes.
Take it.
You need a ride? Yay.
Thank you so much. Would you mind putting your signature there?
Mm-hmm.